was founded in 1900 and became the Labour Party by name in 1906, which came out of the trade union movement for welfare and industrial legislation favourable to trade unions. The early TUC were against state intervention. The ILP was formed before the Labour Party. I think there was 130 people at the founding thing, and they elected Keir Hardie. Both the Labour Party and the ILP were a broad church. The ILP had about 50,000 members at its peak, and the LNP stood 28 candidates in the 1895 general election. They didn't get any seats, but they got over 40,000 votes, but they saw that as a failure, right? I think the first ILP Member of Parliament, he was Member of Parliament for 2 years, it was Victor Grayson or whatever, who was an orator. He went round the country preaching revolution, and he was elected in Colne Valley by about 3,600 votes, and the Liberals and the Tories had just under that, so he was an MP for 2 years. He was a strange character. He preached revolution going around the country and stuff, and then he eventually went into the First World War and fought in the First World War and got shrapnel in his leg. And before that, he had recruited people to go off and fight, the same as Keir Hardie, who died in 1915. He recruited people to go off and fight. But if you look at Wikipedia, it says they were a pacifist party, the ILP, but some of the leaders weren't so pacifist or whatever. So the ILP was positioned to the left of the Labour Party and Ramsay MacDonald. They were affiliated to the Labour Party between 1906, when the Labour Party was formed, and 1932, when they disaffiliated. They tried to reaffiliate in 1939 with some clauses that they were pacifists, and the Labour Party refused to let them reaffiliate. In 1932, when they disaffiliated, Nye Bevan said they would just remain a purist sect or whatever because they were moving away from the Labour Party. In 1947, the ILP had 3 members of Parliament who disaffected parties, and by 1990 they rejoined the Labour Party as the Independent Labour Publications, so they were no longer a political party. World War One marked a breakthrough for the Labour Party. Ramsay MacDonald was against the war, so he resigned. And Arthur Henderson took over in 1915, and he ended up on the Inner War Cabinet in 1916. The ILP were supposedly opposed to conscription, but some of their leaders actually tried to recruit people, so the things on Wikipedia are wrong about them. Paddy tried to correct that, but it got taken down again about Keir Hardie. In 1923, for 9 months, the Labour Party formed a government with the Liberals or whatever. And it only lasted 9 months. There was a vote of confidence and they had to call an election. But one of the things they did was the Wheatley Housing Act, building 500,000 homes to rent. At the time, there was 90% rented property in Britain or whatever. And they actually managed to keep some of the rises in rent down to pre-war levels by legislation. In 1926, 4 days before Poland, there was a Zinoviev letter implicating Labour in a plot for a revolution in Britain. The letter was then proven to be a fake. Labour increased their vote from 30.7% to 33% at the time. In 1929, because the Labour Party you needed to, up to 1918, you had to affiliate to another party, so there were Fabians and ILPers. So they had quite a few members of Parliament were affiliated to the ILP. And in 1928, the ILP proposed 8 demands, which they called socialism in our time. You've got to remember that the ILP was a mixture of Methodists, people that were against alcohol, even some conservatives, but the leadership were a bit left-wing. So they wanted a living wage, increase in unemployment benefit, nationalisation of the banking system, bulk purchase of raw materials, bulk purchase of food, nationalisation of transport, and nationalisation of land and power. In 1925, Attlee, who was in the Socialist League, said the Labour Party believes in the abolition of classes and an egalitarian society. By 1929, with the Wall Street crash, there was 2.5 million unemployed after that. Labour had two contradictory aims, achieving a balanced budget while trying to maintain assistance for the poor and unemployed. They previously increased the unemployment benefit in 1930, but the May report in July urged public sector wage cuts and cuts to unemployment benefit. In 1932, partly due to this, the ILP disaffiliated from the Labour Party. At the time, they only had 16,773 members, and that went down to 4,392 in 1935. Some of the high-profile members were George Orwell, who went off to fight in the Spanish Civil War, and there was 25 ILP members who did that for the Spanish Civil War. After 1932-31, Ramsay MacDonald formed a national Labour thing, and he was called a traitor by the Labour Party. In 1935, Labour only got 52 seats. From 1945 to 1951, the Labour Party were in charge, and with Attlee or whatever, who had talked about a classless society. And he'd been in the war cabinet and things. So he became quite close to the Conservatives. And there wasn't that much to choose between the Conservative manifesto in 1945 and the Labour manifesto. Between 1945 and 1951, they used up to 20,000 troops at a time to break strikes, break picket lines for dockers, mainly miners, mine workers and dockers and lorry drivers and gas workers, mainly the dockers and the miners. The dockers were on a piece rate or whatever, and they took that away, so they asked for a pay rise. They wanted, well, new money. They wanted 80 pence a day to go up to 125 pence a day. Of course, they went on a go slow, and the Labour government put the troops to do the work, and 900 of them were sacked or whatever, and they tried to appeal to the Labour government. It was supposed to be the people's government, and they behaved abysmally like that. In 1945, Morgan Phillips told voters, "Let me remove at the outset the outworn idea that the Labour Party is a class party. Socialism is now defined in terms of overhauling the nation rather than overhauling capitalism, a ruined class, or the economic system." So the Labour Party just wanted, well, a kind of united country or whatever. The Economist at the time, when the National Health Service was would humanise inequality at worst, and it would buttress it at best. By 1951, 47 full-time members of the industry boards, you know, the mines and all the rest of it, 47, only 9 were taken from trade unions. And the part-time ones, 48 part-time members, only 7 were trade unionists. So it wasn't exactly workers' control. George Bernard Shaw said at the time, the workers weren't see any difference. They'll just have new masters, and that's exactly what happened. Labour spent £100 million on atomic energy as a backup for the atomic weapons programme, and they tried to hide that in their figures. They joined NATO at the time. Attlee in the 30s talked about workers' control as an essential part of the new order. Of course, when he became Prime Minister, that went out the window. So the next government I'll look at is 64. Well, gets gone 1960. The clause 4, common ownership of the means of production and exchange, which was put into the Labour manifesto in 1918, and it was used as something to buttress people, you know, for left to appease the left wing. Gatesco tried to get rid of it in 1960 odd, and they turned them down. In 1964, Harold Wilson became the leader of the Labour Party and promised technological revolution. Roy Jenkins said this about things: "There's some reason to believe that the social and technological change which accompany and make possible a faster rate of economic growth may eventually intensify inequality unless strong countermeasures are introduced." He summed up the achievement of the Wilson government. He said, "The poor are still poor, property speculators and some others are still relatively rich. The result is quite inevitably increase in social strain." In 1974 to 1979, according to the Royal Commission on Wealth, between 1974 and 1976, the richest 1% of the population increased their wealth from 22.5% to 24.95%. In 1983, well, I can give you the quote from Tony Benn first. Yeah, Tony Benn said this in 1979: "I have copies of Labour's election manifesto, which I distributed in 1935. The manifesto was far more left-wing with its demands for the nationalisation of John Stockman's than the Labour manifesto of 1979. In 1983, Michael Foote stood as a left-wing candidate, and I think he had Dennis Healey as his deputy. He tried to get Tony Benn, but he didn't get that. According to Gerald Kaufman, it was the longest suicide note in history. Michael Foote stood for unilateral disarmament, leave the EEC, leave NATO, a radical extension of state control over the economy and financial institutions. So it failed. They got about 27.3% of the vote in 1983, one of the worst things for Labour in their history. And that was matched in 2019 with Jeremy Corbyn getting similar levels of the vote or whatever. It's quite interesting. In 2017, the Labour Party had 500,000 members. They did better in 2017 than they did in 2019. But in 2019, I mean, Jeremy Corbyn was, you could say he was writing a suicide note with his nationalisation stuff that he had, right? Yeah. So what are we to make of this, right? Yeah. I think the fact is that if you try to govern capitalism, you end up doing draconian things against the workers. It's like trying to look after the cattle in the slaughterhouse, right? Yeah. And that's why a lot of anarchists are against governments and things. And we're against government as well. We only see the election as a way to bring about socialism or whatever, and end classes and the wages system. In 1918, the Labour Party supported the Mensheviks to some extent. Clause 4 was actually done in 1918, and it was reformed in 1995 by Tony Blair when he came to power. We used to always say the Labour Party have never came out of office when unemployment made less than when they went into office, but that changed with Tony Blair in 1997. In 197 majority, one of the biggest majorities, a landslide. Then later on, he had 170 majority. Then the last election before Gordon Brown, he had a majority of 66 or whatever. So it went to 167 and then 66 in the federal election. That was the best Labour had done. Tony Blair always said that members of the Labour Party are more left-wing than the general public. In 1978, Callaghan said that socialism has always been a matter of controversy in the Labour Party, and there are millions of Labour Party supporters who aren't socialists. That's the problem with Broad Church, and the ILP had the same problem. So anyway, Momentum were formed in 2015, and they supported Jeremy Corbyn. That ended up being a disaster for the Labour Party. after initial success in 2017. I'll end there, you know, just on the note that if you want a revolution, you've got to be clear on your aims and not run capitalism like the Labour Party have done.